on? Okay. Isn't, I may be quite mistaken, but isn't this question in that you are asking, isn't this what was told to the five ascetics, the Anattalattan Sutra about non-self? The way it was questioned, isn't that the same way that in Anattalattan Sutta we were talking about form is not permanent? It seems to me very familiar, the content of the second sutta that was followed. Am I right?
Yes. Actually, whole Indian philosophy is focus of Atma. In India, whole Indian philosophy based on Atma. Even the five ascetic monks, why they unable to attain Nirvana? Because always in their mind, they had this very strong, profound feeling there is a permanent Atma. Then finally, gradually Buddha gave sermons and together gave Anantalakkhana, no so-called Atma. Then they became enlightened. Exactly the same way, to become enlightened, we have to overcome these self-feelings. This is the cause of the suffering. Impermanence is not made by the Buddha. Okay? Impermanence is discovered by all many philosophers in the East and in the West. Even Heraclitus said, man cannot step twice to the same river. That means impermanence. But the Buddha had developed this impermanence concept. He had seen a link between impermanence and suffering. That is, the Buddha will liberate our mind from suffering. He had seen impermanence and suffering are linked together. What is the cause of the suffering? Because of the feeling of Atma. That is misconception. Then Anantalakkhana is the same way Buddha gave the sermon to the five ascetic monks. Thank you. Anyone?
I can talk at all. I think that is recording. Okay. When we talk about the transiency or Anatta, we are talking about compounded elements or just elements, because there are four permanent elements which are not changing, but the compounded elements which are like heart, mind or whatever, the five aggregates, that's the one which changes rather than the four basic elements, isn't it? It's because the four elements are common to both human beings and non-human beings, like trees and rocks and the four elements are there everywhere. But what is common to humans and the devas are they have the five aggregates or parts of five aggregates, isn't it? So when we are talking about anicca, we are talking about compounded elements. Rather, for example, in Satipatthana Sutta, we say, ajjatta bahiddhava kaye kanaspati and ajjatta bahiddhava Vedanan upasi viharati. Like that, you see. So it is the five aggregates, is the impermanence of the five aggregates, not the four elements we are talking about. Is it true or is this the compound? It's very important to say that it is compounded elements rather than elements. The four basic elements, they are called paramatadhammas, which are not changing.
Thank you. The question is clear to us.
Yeah.
Now, according to the teachings of the Buddha here, now the compound or whatever, both of the elements are impermanent, so conducive to suffering, and therefore they are non-self. There's no self in there. Why? Yeah. Now, earth has its quality of solidity, and we go ghana, and it has an sort of continuation that all are just mere formations. They all arise and vanish, last for few moments. So there's no energy. Actually, this word elements confuses the real meaning of dhatu. Dhatu. If we really understand what dhatu means, they are just, we'll say, a part of matter. It's materiality, which come together to give shapes. When they are together, exist together, they give shapes, size, and therefore we see trees, mountains, ladies, gents, etc., etc. But actually, in absolute sense, they are only little dhatu particles, just elements, and which is derived from them are also dhatu. There are different kinds of dhatu. They all are impermanent.
This question was raised even during Buddha's time. What the Hindus or the Veda people believed was that Mahabrahma made permanent elements. And they also called it earth, water, fire, like that. But Buddha said there are no permanent things, no particles. It's a process. All these things arise and vanish. Therefore, he was talking about compound things as well as the basic elements, that they are impermanent. Yeah. Yeah, he said they are processes, not things.
Tree. There is no dependent origination in a rock or a tree. That's the difference between the Thun Loka, the animals, the Deva Loka and the Manusha Loka. They have five aggregates which are compounded things, but which are formed by karmic actions, you see. But whereas the rest of the world, the physical world, they are not subjected to these things. They don't have Vedana, they don't have perception, they don't have Vijnana, because they are not formed by karmic actions, isn't it? So there is a difference between the anatta and the impermanent, the impermanence what Buddha taught, and the changing of matter. You see, because what Buddha taught was the impermanence of the conditioned elements or compounded elements, you see, but the panchaskanda as opposed to the four elements. The four elements is not spiritual thing. It's just matter. It's but the spirituality comes when it is when there is something formed by karmic actions, isn't it? So
yes. Yeah? All right. Thank you for your question. Although these animate and inanimate objects, all right, animate and inanimate objects both commonly have elements operating within them. Stones, buildings, and humans, animals, devas, whatever. But even now, if we talk from the sense of Patijasamupada, avijja paccaya sankhara, which is the starting of the Patijasamupada, speaks about an avidya or sankhara or tanha, which has arisen in the mind due to an object. The object we don't talk about. Do you understand? The object in the Patijasamupada cycle, we don't talk about the object, but we talk about the effect of the object, which is now happening in the cycle. That is why you won't find anything about a bahidha, rupa or element within the Patijasamupada. because the Buddha is trying to explain, enumerate on the process which goes on within the mind, which creates this consistent, this becoming and all of that. Alright? But in the sense of talking about anatta, impermanence and non-self and all of that, well, we have elements within our body, and there are elements in these chairs as well. Alright? The elements basically have nothing to do with the mind. Alright? The elements have nothing to do with the mind, but the mind comprehends these elements. Right? Now I see the chair, I'm sitting on a table, I know that the chair should be sat on and the table should be used for books, because I comprehend with my mind the elements to be as such. Right? This is the mind, it is a mind game that we are playing, and these elements procreate itself to the mind in different ways. Alright, and in understanding through vipassana that there are elements in these chairs, and there is elements in dogs, animals, the ladies, the gents, all of that is the understanding necessary over the elements to allow one to realize, however hard a chair or a building might be, it is still impermanent. It will rust, it will decay. Through that understanding, I know that this world, these houses, all of that is not worth clinging on to. If you go on to a more subtle object, you know, this body is growing old, my hair is growing whiter, my skin is wrinkling, my cells are developing into cancer cells. There is always change within these elements. That is what. So these elements, you can actually look at it in different perspectives. But whatever perspective you look by, all of these elements have that condition to change. The world samsara, if we call all the galaxies and universes samsara, samsara will never be devoid of elements. Alright, samsara will never be devoid of elements. Not to say that the dhatus or the elements are permanent, but to say that although one element passes away, there are other elements. In that way, you can say that samsara will always be with elements. But these elements too changes. The Buddha says that a rupa dhatu has a lifetime of 16 chittakkanas, mind moments. In 16 mind moments, every 16 mind moments, a new rupa comes into existing. Now, that is animate, this body, which is conditioned by a mind. When you talk about a chair, which is something inanimate without a mind, that is being conditioned by the utu. By the utu. So when it is hot, it's raining, and you leave a chair outside, you can see that the paint goes off, rust, the cushion is destroyed by the water, whatever it is. Now, these are also changes of the rupas in inanimate objects. Alright? And you contemplating upon the rising and the falling away of the Panchapadana Skandha, you can contemplate on the rising and the falling away of the Panchapadana Skandha in your body and also in other parts. But when you're contemplating on a chair or a building, you do not focus on the Nama part, but only on the Rupa part. Do you understand?
There is no point in concentrating on the...
No, you can't say that, because my mind is difficult, your mind is difficult. I might be overly attached to my gold cutlery or my pot of china.
Yeah, you know. Then it's the mental factors, which is sankhara, which is again five aggregate, one of the five aggregates.
Yes, so it's not, but the it actual is my liberation itself. Will at that moment be through realizing that my china, my expensive china, is anicca.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, but so we are not concentrating. We don't. I mean, to attain enlightenment, we are actually. When we do that, we have to concentrate on the anicca of our mental factor.
For sure. Yes, you have
not
to come
the
there.
Actual,
yes.
The,
but initially, it does not start
of
there.
The chair or the whatever, the cutlery.
Yeah. Yes, enlightenment, all of this, even you coming into the vihara and giving a dana is a part of your enlightenment. It is no different from your enlightenment.
Yes, that's
even the minor attributes of how you think about all of these things around you is a part of your enlightenment. Nothing different. Nothing apart from it. Right? So if you're talking about something above sankhara upekha or namaru paricheda, then yes, it's all about the mind, about the battles inside the mind and how your mind cognizes objects. But that does not mean that we can leave out the simple cognition of chairs, tables, houses, jewelry, beauties, all of that. Right?
Actually, I have another question about going back to morality, you see. So we are, actually, they say that we are in the start of Kali Yuga, you see. It is, so when in the latter stages of Kali Yuga, of course, it was actually during a sermon by Buddha itself to King Kosala's these dreams. He has predicted that there will come a stage where the morals will turn upside down. In other words, you see, morality, immorality will be seen as morality, or people don't will not be able to distinguish between. So what is the actual, how do you distinguish morality or ethics in a society according to Buddhism? You see, it is...
Now, this simple analogy was well explained by Venerable Kassapa according to this Ambalattika Rahulovada Sutta. It's very simple. Now take these five principles, refraining from killing, stealing, etc., etc. There are some universal virtues. Right? Wherever you go, whenever, if it is unwholesome, it's not wholesome, right? It's unwholesome. But in some grounds, in some countries, some places, which is good here, will not be good somewhere. Which is right here, will not be right there. So, as long as the society goes on, no matter how many times it changes by timelines, still good is good, bad is bad. Why? There are social norms. They are always changing, that's fine. But still, your consciousness, your heart would say, oh, this is illegal, this is unfair, this is not good, this is not going to be beneficial. That's put this into, like, in this analogy given to Rahula. If whatever you think, speak or do, which is beneficial to you and beneficial to others, which is good. If not, it's not good.
Yes.
Very simple.
Okay. The criteria is given here, there, which is good for myself and good for others. That is the universal criteria to find what is good. If it is good for others, not good for me, it is not good. If it is good for me, but not good for others, it is also not good. The criteria is clearly given, as Venerable Kassapa explained, in the Ambalattika Sutta. If something is good for myself and good for others as well, that is the criteria in Buddhism, what we can find what is good. Anyone would like to ask any questions? Yeah, that's enough for you, because a lot of other people, we have to allow them to. Thank you very much, your contribution.
Well, this is what my understanding was, and I may be quite wrong, that there are the Shraddhavanta Satpurusha and the Panyavanta. So some people come from a very faith-based one, realizing, others from Samadhi, it becomes Panya. And from the, I couldn't, in my mind, understand how you could say that Rahula was a Shraddhavanta and whatever is, and not a Panda. How can he, without knowing what his qualities were, how could you say that he was a Shraddhavanta Satpurusha and not a Pranyavanta? I couldn't understand.
Now, all these five faculties develop together. Faith, energy, happiness, sati, mindfulness, and concentration and wisdom. These five faculties are to be practiced constantly, every day, every night, every time. Yeah? But with the practice, according to the character type, one factor becomes predominant. So, that's why I suspect Yeah, I suspect that Rahula should have been lustful of his glory, because in the discourse, in these two discourses, Buddha was dealing with conceit. Ahinkara, Maminkara, Mana. Those are the three words. Conceit, Tanha, Ditti, Mana. Tanha, Ditti, Mana. Yeah. No, these three Anushes. Anushes. Yeah. Latent tendencies of the mind. So Buddha was advising always to Rahula to eliminate, to destroy the Tanha, Ditti, and Mana. But Mana is very special here, the key word he used to reduce, to destroy, to abolish. Therefore, I suspected that, because one should have one way of Nibbana towards. Nibbana is one, that's right, but three gateways. For according to our skill, our ability, our attitude towards whatever, that one of these five faculties become predominant. So basically, one group is driven by Saddha, the other concentration, and few so wisdom, like Sariputta's, you know. So that is why I thought, and he took so many years to understand. So together, I think he might have gone through this Saddha. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You may have more questions, I know. But I would like to conclude the forum for today. It's very, very helpful discussion. Very, very good contributions were made. We really appreciate your coming. And even though in August we don't have some formal activities, but this discussion we will have during August 1 Sunday evening. So we will circulate emails regarding the discussion, Dhamma Forum, in August. Time being, we have to conclude. Now time is 9, right? Between 7 to 9 is the duration which we have allocated for this Buddhist forum here. I think you all appreciate this discussion, helpful to widen our knowledge, the horizon of our wisdom, to understand more important in Buddhism how one can become enlightened. Very important. So therefore, I first of all would like to appreciate and congratulate and thank to our venerable brother monks. They have given wonderful contributions. I too had an opportunity to learn more last few days. Taking these sutras, I haven't seen this one. You see, I have read couple of times. So therefore, all we have the opportunity to develop our wisdom. Thank you for coming. May you all be well and happy.